Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 3 of the podcast, still on the internet. Josie Altidore coming up. We'll talk to him about the terrific start the TFC's had, as well as what it's been like playing in Toronto compared to all his time in Europe.
He's had a lot of time in Europe.
Yeah.
Do I sound different?
Yeah, you sound a little hoarse.
I think that's exciting for the audience because they may not know whether I'll last the show. It's very, that's reality. Well, reality radio as opposed to reality TV. You don't have a lot of radio shows where somebody gets voted off or somebody goes on a date with somebody, but I may not be able to finish.
No. That was me last week. All my laughs turned into
You sounded
into
better
half-cough.
Than. Come on, you sounded better than. And the brief times that we're actually awake at the same time, and I'm seeing you on television or walking through the hallways, and you're on television. When I hear you, your voice didn't change terribly much.
No, fake it till you make it.
That's what was happening.
Mine was allergies, though. I think at the tail end, I don't think I gave you this.
I haven't been surrounded by anybody else that has a cough. And I know you'll say, well, you have kids, but they seem to be immune to everything. Mm. I mean, I come down with stuff and they don't get it. But I make it a point to stay away. So it's been tea instead of coffee. It's been, there's a eucalyptus steam room. Not
Ooh.
To brag. I know. Yeah. At Lifetime Fitness.
Wow. What a life.
So it's like, inhaling a lot of eucalyptus leaves at the same time.
Oh, that sounds healthy.
It's a bit of a contact high at a certain point in time. Josie Altidore will join us. They had a draw. They finally didn't win a game because they'd won 7 in a row, and they drew against the New York Red Bulls on Friday night out near New Jersey at that particular arena. And, it'll be an interesting summer. It's a summer without a World Cup. It's a summer without Euros, so they don't take a big break. But there is an international break, so he and Michael Bradley, USA soccer teammates, mm-hmm. will be taking off for a couple weeks. And I've only been to the one game so far, and the weather was pretty lousy. But it's I hope it's become and stays the thing to do. And you don't have to worry about the roof being on it. Like, the Jays are great, but it's, hey, there's a roof sometimes, and you don't get quite the weather atmosphere that you can have in a dome stadium. Put it that way. So last night, we're taping this on Tuesday after a Victoria Day weekend, and there was just a terrible moment happened at a live music venue at the Manchester Arena. Mm-hmm. Ariana Grande was playing a sold-out concert. About 20,000 people, and though it's an unspeakable tragedy. There's right now, as we're talking, there's at least 22 people dead, 59 injured.
Yeah.
There was a man who died in the blast and detonated an explosive. There's another man that's being held for questioning. Beyond the obvious of the fact that Europe has felt very different in the last 12, 14 months with a number of attacks, I never know whether. And you've been for sporting events. It has that different feel there than it does here in North America. Like, I asked the guys on the morning show this morning whether they're surprised in almost 16 years since 9/11 that they've never felt unsafe in an arena. They've never walked into a North American sporting venue and saw something that would concern them, heard chatter that would concern them, or even believed that something could transpire. And yet, if I asked them, I said, are you both surprised that sort of hasn't been a target at any point in 16 years? And naturally, because sometimes you can expect the worst from people and what terrorism is. I'm a little surprised. And there it happens in Manchester last night.
Well, and I think what's so sad too is the audience. I mean, this is an Ariana Grande concert. So there's kids, there's young people. And if I think back to when I was younger, a preteen, an early teenager, and you're going to your first concert and you're away from your parents maybe for the first time, right? It's one of those concerts where parents drop you off.
Totally.
And
it
they
is
tell
that.
You, be careful, just do everything you're told, and we'll come pick you up after. And all that joy and happiness at a concert like that just completely turns to fear. And I mean, that is the point of the attack. It's to instill fear in those going to these types of events, to not feel safe. And I think that's just the that's what's heartbreaking. But what's nice is you hear about the good immediately following the bad. You hear about Manchester opening their doors, letting kids in, opening their beds, their couches.
Cab drivers working for free last night, just making sure everybody gets to where they need to go to, whether they've got money or not, whether they've got a debit card or not. They make sure that they get to where they need to go, no matter how far away it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a lot of different minds on it. I understand the concept that you can't, you got to live your life normally or quote unquote, the terrorists win. But I also remember George W. Bush saying that after 2001, where he's like, get on a plane and take your families and travel and stimulate the economy. So, but it's a double-edged sword. You do have to be more careful. I had a very world-weary feeling going to France last year for the games that I went to for the Euros, going with a couple friends from England. We were going to travel all over the place. We went to seven or eight games. And I settled when I got there. It took a day and a half. But even just getting off the plane into the airport, I thought, this is tense. There's tension there. There'd been an attack at the big stadium the previous November. There'd been the Brussels attack at the subway, at the airport, I should say, in Brussels, was about a month earlier. And there just seems to be access to venues and large public places in Western Europe that there isn't. And I'd say also that I don't have a lot of close British or Irish relatives. Most of the people I've known, it's been in the last 15, 20 years because of work that I've become friends with. But also they grew up with terrorism, with the IRA and problems in Ireland and Northern Ireland. And so they almost feel like they're on a higher sense of alert than how we were pre-9/11, where it was like, oh, well, awful. Why would anyone want to do this to us? And you're like, well, there are answers. There are competing, if you will, clashing ideologies about the world and so much religion, imperialism, how it all works. But it hadn't happened in North America. So it just seemed something you saw on TV, not that you lived through. And even in Canada, with an awful shooting at Cal Polytechnic when I was starting at Western in 1990. And since then, I think there's been a couple incidents, but I don't think we've had the snap of a finger one moment like what would have been in Manchester last night or in an airport in Canada. It just, we feel safer, and maybe we should, because we just aren't, we don't feel like we're targets like European countries are and like the United States is.
Well, and I think regardless of where you are in the world, when you hear news like this because of the audience, because it's young people, I think it hits a bit closer to home. And the question now is how do people describe this to their kids? I mean, this is something that's relatable to children. It's somewhere that they go. And I remember 9/11. I was young.
Yeah.
And I was in, I guess, middle school and entering middle school. And I remember our teachers ending the day and talking to us about it and what happened and any questions we had going forward. And my parents that Christmas break drove us down to New York to go see Grand Zero.
Yeah, okay.
To try and explain it and describe it, which was it was educational.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you relate to stuff so much when you're young. When I grew up, it was very much the era of, for lack of a better term, the assassination.
Yeah.
It was like every 3 or 4 months, someone was attempting to kill a world leader, whether it was U.S. President Reagan, whether it was, an attempt, Anwar Sadat, who was Egypt's PM, was murdered just after giving an address on television. So that stuff seemed to happen a lot more, and there weren't these mass acts of, and there were also plane hijackings, but that was more to get something. That was more, I hate saying it, what you see in movies. That was, fly me somewhere. give us money. We want this. It was like Die Hard. That's basically what it was. And that seems so adrift from our reality, where you could be in a building and be a hostage, or be on a plane and be a hostage. And obviously that's changed in the last 16 years, where we're so sensitive to it that it's impossible to be desensitized. And yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, Carolyn, with the whole, it can't be considered a lower blow than what an attack in a public place usually is, but this concert seems early days in analyzing it, specifically, let's get people while they're young. Yeah. And of course, it does seem...
And innocent.
Yeah, beyond words to do that with people who are 10 and 11 and 15 and 16. And that's obviously, to me, someone may indicate that there's a randomness to it that's just like, well, we had a plan for this arena, and this just happened to be the show. Like, Kiss is playing there next week. It could have been Kiss instead of Ariana Grande, but it does feel like it's a message from the terrorist groups, from ISIS specifically, who's taken responsibility for it. I don't know. I think we're talking about it because it's important to talk about. Mm-hmm. But also, I do think any of us who ever feel put out somehow by security measures at our stadiums when we go to a game or we go to an event, I never even give it a second thought.
No.
I know there's people that get annoyed. Oh, I didn't get into the game until the third inning. I missed a goal at the Leafs game because we had
You'll
to go through metal detectors. Yeah, in a big hurry. I love that they're there. It was like going to France and seeing soldiers with guns drawn, walking everywhere, not in a holster, a giant like submachine gun that they're walking around carrying. And I'm like, well, there's less chance of it going off accidentally than there is them stopping something when it happens immediately.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want civilians to be armed. I draw that distinction, but I'm happy they're there. If I didn't see police officers, if I didn't see riot gear police with shields and whatnot, I'd be more worried that I'm not in the right place. When I see them, I know I'm in the right place at a major event. Olympics are like that too. Major events of any kind.
Yeah.
Wimbledon, you've been to Wimbledon. I mean, it's decently protected.
Yeah, it's still sad to see that there has to be that much protection, but I know what you mean. There is a sense of security when you see that.
Yeah. So on to more pleasant things. The Nashville Predators make the Stanley Cup final. We know they're there. We're waiting to find out as we talk today. Pittsburgh is in Ottawa for Game 6. But it's really something. And I noticed you were mentioning on Twitter last night, you are a yet-to-visit Nashville type person. I am, too. What's the biggest thing that draws you into wanting to go? It just feels like it's all anybody has been talking about the last 2 or 3 weeks is how deserving this is, how deserving the fans are, what a crazy fan base it is. And it has been a remarkable ride for them, for a team that's never gotten out of the second round before, and a market that I think we as Canadians probably used to scoff at.
Yeah,
we're like, oh, really? Is this going to work? And then the first 5 years, they didn't make the playoffs. And for the first 10 years, they didn't get out of the first round. And we're like, well, how long can this last?
I haven't seen or heard more about a city in the playoffs than I have Nashville. And maybe it's the scenics going in and out of break when the games are in Nashville and you see, is it called Broadway?
I guess it is. Yeah,
I think it's Broadway. And the thing, too, from
see, they stole that also. That's New York.
From talking, see, now I coughed, excuse me. But from talking to people who have been there and coworkers, is you've got the main drag, and there's so much live music, and there's so much personality, and then you've got the hockey arena right there, too. So when you come out of a game, and it's great crowd, you're right in the heart of what you want to be at. They call it Nash Vegas.
Yeah.
I got to go.
Yeah. I think even in certain cities, there'd be a sense of envy about it that you're kidding me, right? Like another year will go by and a Canadian team either doesn't win or isn't in the final. Let's say Nashville were to win, they're 4 wins away.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be a sense of envy about it, but also a sense of, I don't feel that sense of resentment is there.
No.
Whereas when Tampa Bay won or Florida makes the final or Carolina won,
it's
you're like, are you kidding me? Those people don't live and breathe and die for their team like we supposedly do in wherever, Vancouver, Edmonton, Toronto, Montreal, wherever it is. And yet I don't feel like there's that, it's not even a word, begrudgery towards the Preds.
You
know, it is towards the Preds and their fans. And I think obviously if you're a Canadian and you have any semblance of, I'm not a country music person, but I can only imagine it's exciting every night to see like this celebrity and that celebrity and this, it is very much Garth Brooks is there last night. I barely recognized him with his giant beard.
Yeah. I don't even like country music and I want to go to Nashville.
And you want to go to Nashville.
So there you go. I've been sucked in. It was interesting seeing what PK Subban said too after the win, because he said, I mean, he played for an A-plus organization in Montreal and such a strong fan base, and he said nothing can compete with the atmosphere. I mean, of course he would say this, but he said nothing could compete with Nashville and their fan base. And I think we're a little naive, too, in Canada to think that we're the only ones who really care. Now, I know there are struggling franchises in the States, and we see it on TV with empty seats and Panthers games and fan bases lacking. But
Arizona's been a long-standing problem with where the arena
but
is.
But you see the crowd that was outside?
Yeah.
It was nuts. I mean, it looked like people were there for an outdoor concert.
And I think there's a newness to it. I think you
yeah,
get into that.
Everyone loves a winner.
You get into that syndrome where you end up having the same expectations every year. So you're almost wake me up when the playoffs come. I think the Atlanta Braves gave their fans that over the years. I think I lived in Detroit. I saw it with the Red Wings. It's like, how could you get excited about a regular season game when your goal is to win the playoffs every year? I mean, we're going to talk about that with the NBA right now, or in a little bit with Golden State. I mean, how can you get revved up for a Golden State regular season game against the T-Wolves, even if you've got two great young stars coming in November of next year? It's really difficult to make that transition, and yet we've seen this with the Predators, where it's been really, really embraced. And either matchup's fascinating, right? Because you either have Crosby and Malkin, defending champs, et cetera, against the upstart Predators, who were very good, deceptively good all season long. The people that watched them really closely knew how good they were. Or you've got a Canadian team who's going to have to come from behind in this series, mind you, and we're questioning the passion in the Ottawa market. Eugene Melnyk had a comment today where he said,
they're not sold out.
It's kind of nuts that he's the owner of the team. He put heart and soul into it. They're not a cap team, but they've done all the right things this year. They've got a great, they've made a right great coach and hire in Guy Boucher. They've done a lot of moves to make this possible. Caught some breaks along the way, and in a possible either you're saying goodbye to your team for three rounds that have been really exciting, or you're sending them off to a game seven in Pittsburgh. Either way is a good reason to go to the game, and they haven't sold out the tickets, and the game's hours away.
I do find it interesting, though, and you mentioned the NBA, because on Monday night, it was the night that the Predators advanced to the Stanley Cup final, and it was the same night the Golden State Warriors advanced to their third straight NBA finals. And it was about just 15 minutes apart. The hockey game ended, and I flipped over to the basketball, and the ESPN crew, they were talking, they actually brought up the Preds. Now, the Warriors were up 18 at this point with about 9 or 8.5 minutes to go in the fourth. So, I mean,
yeah,
they can talk about other things because we kind of knew how it was going to end. But it's just, it shows you how different the Stanley Cup playoffs are compared to the NBA playoffs, and that the eighth seed in the West makes it to the final as a surprise. And everything is just status quo minus that Celtics loss in Boston.
Yeah, and yet ratings haven't been bad for the NBA. Everybody checks in. It's almost like something you gotta check in on the. It's like going around your house or apartment, being, did I leave the oven on? And you go see. Well, no, I didn't. But then you don't stare at the oven for the next half hour. You're like, well, let me just see. Yeah, Golden State's up 19. Okay, I got something else to do.
Off.
Exactly. You're just making sure that the world didn't turn on its axis, which it did the other night, as you mentioned, with Boston Cleveland.
But you know,
and so we probably
just
stuck with it a lot longer, and you were rewarded if you did with a great fourth quarter.
Oh, it was great, but it's also a flash in the pan. I mean, that was without Isaiah Thomas. That was in Cleveland. LeBron didn't play well, and that's not going to happen often. So, I mean, the NBA playoffs, to me, it is disappointing how there's no surprises, but that's just the NBA that we know it to be today. And it has been over years. I mean, dynasties in the NBA are nothing new. But this dominance, we better get a great NBA Finals.
But I think you made a great distinction between dynasty and dominance, because Chicago never won in a sweep in the NBA Finals, and they lose their share of games going there. Even take Golden State the last 2 years. So they go and they win.
It's been tough.
With Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love hurt for Cleveland in LeBron's first year back, and they lost 5 games in total last year. I mean, people forget they were on the ropes in the conference final to Oklahoma City. They lost a game to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a game to Portland with Damian Lillard injured. They win 4-3 over the Thunder, and they lose 4-3. So they lost nine regular season games. They were 73-9. Then they go 15-9 in the playoffs. So to be 12-0 this year, like, it's one thing to do it on paper, and it's another thing, like, the players aren't robots. LeBron James just proved that to you the other night. And to be 12-0, and the idea that they could, I mean, not just beat Cleveland, but smash them If they did.
They better not. Honestly.
Who do you want to win?
What are we waiting for?
Who do you support?
That in the newsroom. Sometimes I find I don't know who I want to win, and I haven't decided, and I find that once I start watching game one on, what is it, June 1st?
Yes,
it's like,
this is a long way away.
Cheesy, but I find my mind or heart will just decide. I'll just start getting into it,
yeah,
and that's how I know who I want to win.
I'm like that, too. I haven't had a dislike for the Warriors. In fact, when they were that sort of knocking on the door team,
I always felt like I pulled for them. Yeah, but things have changed, and the Warriors don't.
There's a cockiness.
Exactly,
there's a confidence turned into cockiness.
There's a bit of an attitude. There's Durant saying, "Oh well, if you think these playoffs are boring, don't watch." I mean,
yeah,
let's just play.
So LeBron, I'm curious though. LeBron doesn't polarize you. Like, I feel like there are Crosby, Tiger Woods, Mike Tyson. I feel like there's always athletes. There certainly are in tennis. There's athletes that you just can't be indifferent about. And so LeBron James does what? Because I feel I always support him. I always,
even back in the not one.
Yeah,
not two,
I didn't.
Three.
I did want to. I don't think it was about seeing Chris Bosh win. I think it was being excited that he'd made this decision. I didn't like how he did it, but a lot of people didn't like that he did it, period. They felt like there are still those old schoolers that think, play for the team you drafted, that drafted you and never leave. And yet, it's your career. You got a tight window to be great, to make the money, to achieve a legacy. And LeBron, that's all he's really playing for now, is a legacy, to go to seven finals. He's probably going to go to 11 finals before it's all said and done. He's only 32. But I didn't like the decision, and yet when Miami came around in the playoffs, I was really disappointed Dallas beat them. I was really disappointed that Dallas ended up beating them, and then I found it really hard to root against Cleveland last year. Once they were down 3-1, we all kind of gave up on them. We thought, that's just going to be that. And can you imagine, had they lost that Game 7, then they blow a 3-1 lead against the Chicago Cubs in the World Series? Like, you're just teasing the city of Cleveland, Ohio, more than you. And they're still upset about the Tribe losing, but at least they've got their NBA title.
I couldn't stand the decision, and I couldn't stand. I remember I was interning at the Fan at the time, and I had to cut the clips of that ridiculous. What would you even call it when it was Bosh, Wade? It was like a pep rally. And LeBron,
it was, with dry ice and smoke.
Yeah. Oh,
and
it was ridiculous.
And they were like, they were,
it's
yeah.
It's a bad opening to a boy band.
It was, yes. It was. You have not seen a Backstreet Boys concert open quite with that amount of swagger.
But what's interesting now is, I mean, I feel the same way about Kevin Durant going to Golden State last offseason. So it'll be interesting now if people are cheering for LeBron, who kind of was one of the originators of this whole
kind of showing the way, going his own way. Yeah.
And now that's the Warriors. That bothered me last year. And it still bothers me that Durant's now in the finals of the team that he was so close to beating last year in the conference finals.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean,
give
me a good final. That's all I want.
That's
please.
I think all anybody wants is split,
something competitive.
Split the first two games in
six or seven
in Golden State and make sure it goes more than five games, and keep everybody healthy. That's a big thing. That would have been a great final 2 years ago if they lost Kevin Love in the first round against Boston, and then Kyrie was hurt, tried to play, got hurt again, but he was amazing when he played.
And that's been the story of these NBA playoffs, too, is there's been so many injuries. I mean, same actually with the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I mean, the Spurs with no Kawhi Leonard for most of this series, it's just...
That's a big factor. Yeah, I think it's going to all change for San Antonio next season, but I've said that the last two or three seasons where I just think they can't maintain a certain level, especially after Tim Duncan retired. So the fact they won 61 games this year was sort of shocking at the end of the day that they pulled it off. So we've got Josie Altidore on deck from Toronto FC, with Toronto FC having a very busy summer. Their next home game happens to be this coming Friday against the Columbus Crew, a Friday night game at 7 o'clock, and they play the Ottawa Fury in the Canadian Championship. That used to be sponsored by Nutrilite. I'm sorry that I don't know who sponsors it now.
Ugh.
And I'm not even sure if I have Nutrilite products in my house, but I might. I don't know.
Who knows?
So Jozy Altidore is the striker for Toronto FC, a U.S. National team player, went to the 2010 World Cup for USA and South Africa and 2014 with Russia, and he joins us now.
You're probably thrilled the team is doing well, but it's also been great to have the, you know, the individual achievement for you as well. It's you've been a major contributor to why the team's got off to such a great start. It has to feel wonderful.
Yeah, it feels great. You know, team's clicking right now, which is always, you know, you like to see. So hopefully we can continue this form into a tough summer stretch, which is mainly where this league, when we get tested the most. So hopefully we can get through the summer grind well and put ourselves in good position to come towards playoff.
I mean, you've been on a great individual role yourself with 6 goals already this season in 12 games. What's been clicking for you individually?
I think the team's playing well. You know, creating opportunities for me and for Seba, for Shane. You know, whoever's playing up front is getting chances to score goals, and it's just a matter of putting them away. So, it's a testament to how good we've been playing, the type of soccer we've been playing, playing a lot of good team ball. So, that's made it easy on us.
A whole faction of people feel like because most of this group came back, that was the team that finished so strong last year, the team that went on the playoff run. Was that important? You know, and just with the travel you've had, even between leagues, how important consistency is. Everyone had great expectations, I think, for your group this year, Jozy, because so many of you came back. Does that factor in? There just weren't a lot of new faces, and that's been good for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's always important when you're trying to build something, right? Over time, it's important to have a lot of the same guys that have played important roles. And if you look around this locker room now, you know, we have a mix of guys that have been in Toronto for a long time and know this team needs to the city and to the country. And we have guys that, you know, are, you know, whether they're veterans that are from around the league that know what it takes to win games, and then mix that in with some nice youth players that have come in and shown their talent. So we have a recipe to do something special, but, you know, we talk a lot about trying to do it. Hopefully this year we can go one step further.
I mean, when people talk about this team, the names that usually come up are you and Sebastian Giovinco. When you hear one of your names, you hear the other. With your time in Toronto with him, how's your relationship grown, and how's kind of your friendship helped on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm on the field with him, you know, you always want to give your best, but even more so when you're on the field together. You know, I want to make sure that I do everything to make sure he gets his opportunities and vice versa. And off the field from day one, from the day I arrived in Toronto, we both stayed up the 4 seasons, we ran into each other, sat down and just started talking about, you know, our past, where we've played, and what, you know, what's to come in Toronto. And he's a great guy. We've hit the ground running on and off the field, and, you know, I couldn't be happier, luckier to play with a guy like him.
Tell me what surprised you a little bit, maybe, about living in Toronto. You'd come here when you were playing with Red Bulls, when the team started, and you'd visit, and you'd probably think, I always say about New York, it's sort of like a mini New York City. It's like London, it's like Paris, it's like a lot of big cities. What have you found being a resident here that either surprised you or has just really encouraged you, made you feel comfortable?
Well, when I came here that time when I was younger, I didn't leave the hotel. I was like 17 or 18. I came, played the game, and left. You know, and even when I've been here with the national team, I've never really, you know, explored the city or anything. I always thought, you know, it looks nice, looks cool, but I never had a chance to really explore it. I didn't know what to expect. But looking back on the, you know, the past 2 years and up till now, I mean, it's probably been the best, you know, 3 years of my life in terms of my life, like living life, having a life. I think a lot of that gets lost as professional athletes, you know, where everybody just wants to see what we do on the field or on the courts or whatever. And having a life is kind of secondary. But for me here, I mean, it's amazing. I'm able to do so much off the field. And, you know, I put it down as one of the best cities in the world to live in. It's terrific, aside from the winter. The winter's horrible. But aside from that, it's terrific.
I mean, you've been able to live so many places in your young career, just being in your late 20s. And you've been able to play in so many different stadiums around the world. And there's one story that Craig Forrest, he always told. He was playing, I believe it was in El Salvador in the early 90s, and he said it was one of the worst places he ever played, and they threw bags of urine, of pee, yeah, at them, yeah, on the pitch. Yeah. Where's the worst place you've played or the worst experience you've ever had?
That's up there. You always get that going to Central America. I've had that bags of pee thing happen a couple times now. Worst place. I would say Central America is pretty bad, and then some places you play around in Europe, the eastern parts of Europe, aren't the best in terms of still having some racism and things like that happen. So that's never a fun trip, only because of those type of things. But, you know, sorry to put a somber topic on this conversation, but that's probably the worst. You know, you can deal with Central America. They're loud. They're difficult. You get the bags of peat, but it's all in the sportsmanship. I know it sounds crazy, but you know you to expect that. But the racism part, you would hate to see that still playing a part, you know, in this day and age.
When you hear things like that, when you are on the pitch, does it affect you? Is it hard not for it to affect you in a game?
I mean, the sad part is it's to the point where when you go to those places, you kind of expect it. So when you're there, you're kind of like, it startles you a bit, but you keep playing because you know going to that venue or those venues, you know that those things could happen. And yeah, you kind of take a moment, you're like, really? And then you just keep going. You report it after the game, and it's out of your hands after that.
Was England, I've been to, I've done a lot of freelance for BBC, and I've been to maybe 7 or 8 of the venues in England and seen the Championship, seen Premier League games, seen the Euro games. I feel like it's better than most of Europe, or am I wrong about that? When you played for Hull, when you played for Sunderland, did it seem maybe you were expecting something and it ended up being better than it was in terms of fan behavior? Of course they're going to get on you. Of course they're going to say stuff and dig up stuff and say whatever they can. But they do that with they're going to do that with David Beckham. They're going to do that with Wayne Rooney, right?
Yeah, no. The banter, as they call it, is great in England. I think the fans. You know, it's actually one of the things you go to see when you go to a game, to hear some of the chants and some of the nicknames they have for players. It's actually quite funny. I find it really, really funny and entertaining. The fans are great over there. Obviously, when you're doing well, they're fantastic. When you're doing bad, not so much. But overall, I think it's a spectacle in itself, the way the crowds chant and have such a good sense of humor.
Josie Altor is kind enough to join us on the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast. Toronto FC off to a great start, so is he, with 6 goals in the league game so far. And, of course, a fixture on the U.S. men's national team. We'll get to the CONCACAF qualifying in a little bit. It's hard to sort of put it all into the time-space continuum, but you leave Sunderland, and 2 years later, they get relegated this year. I'm sure you still have friends on the team, and relegations... Hull City went through it as well. It's one of the most frightening things, I think, for players, for managers, for executives. It's hard for North American fans to sort of relate to it, but living through it, it can't be easy being close to the drop zone late in the year.
No, it's not. It's definitely uneasy. It's stressful. Everybody's on edge a little bit, so it's never fun. Never an ideal position you want to be in. But that's also what makes the leagues in Europe also, you can say, more dramatic to a certain extent, knowing that, you know, if a certain expectation isn't reached, that can be one of the consequences. But to each his own in terms of preference with that. Me personally, I didn't find it fun. I didn't find it amusing at all, knowing that, you know, you're basically your life can change, which includes a lot more than me, you know, if you have a family, things like that. So it's definitely dramatic. It's tough. And, you know, I feel for Sunderland. They have a great fan base, great stadium. And it's not going to be an easy road not trying to find their way back to the Premier League.
Speaking of difficulties, and it's like ripping off a Band-Aid, looking back at the MLS Cup final last season, how hard was it to lose the game in that way with Seattle not managing a single shot on goal through 120 minutes of regulation and added extra time, and then losing it to them in penalty kicks? Does it make you just think, oh, is this really the best way to play the game?
Yeah, I mean, I always said that. I felt like it should have been a game like that. Should be a play to your score, man. It should be play to somebody scores, wins the game, and I just think that's the best way. A game like it's just so bittersweet that a game like that ends in penalty kicks. But that's the rules, obviously. Again, you know, there's nothing we can do to change that. So it was a bit bittersweet, especially to lose in Toronto. That was really hard, seeing all the fans and so many people that fought the team for so long. They're just crushed, and that wasn't an easy week, months. You know, it's not easy now. It's something that you just can't forget until you hopefully get to that game again.
So you know, your job is with Toronto FC, and I'd say you've made a home here. You're one of the more popular athletes in the city. But is the USA thing on your mind? You got CONCACAF qualifying. You got a game in Denver against Trinidad and Tobago. It wasn't the greatest start to the campaign. Then you go to Mexico. When you play these matches, and even being a year out from Russia to maybe go to your third World Cup, how often is it on your mind? How often are there? Do you and Michael talk about it, or text conversations with other teammates? It's a team within a team, really. Even though you're only together maybe 3-4 times a year.
Yeah, it's difficult. To be honest, I don't really think about it that much. I mean, I think about it as it leads up to it, because it's not obviously the main priority. But obviously, when it does come up, you know, when you do get the chance to play for your national team, it's the best thing ever. And I'm thinking about nothing else but that. So it's weird, definitely, because right now you're not really thinking about it. And then as it creeps up closer to you and you get the call to go in, then it starts to be, you know, your main focus, obviously. And that's all really that comes to your mind is representing your country and then playing well. So it's definitely a challenge, but it's one that I feel like I've gotten the hang of over the last few years.
It might be hard to judge from your perspective, but do you find that maybe you're more appreciated and your skills more appreciated in Canada from our nation's soccer perspective, or in the U.S. with the national team?
I have no idea. I wouldn't, you know, I don't pay attention that much to that kind of thing. I mean, early on in my career I did, but now I have a young son. I have you know, my own kind of family. You know, when I'm done playing soccer, it kind of turns off. So I don't really know. You know, it's a great question. I wish I could answer it, but I don't know. Young Josie would know, because young Josie would go and read about how he played and all that. But now I kind of know. I'm old enough and experienced enough to assess my own performances and know what I need to do better. And as long as you're pleasing your coach, your teammates. And I think that's the most important thing.
It's funny, before you go, I thought about that with Tosin Ricketts, with the run he's on. I mean, I've lived in both Canada and the U.S., and to know Canada made the World Cup, Josie, when I was 14 in 86, and you're like, well, of course it'll happen again, and it'll keep happening. And that was sort of a low ebb for the U.S. was those few years before you were born. When I think about hosting in 2026, I go, well, that's rough, because Tosin or even yourself, it's like, you wish there was a window here, right? And that, yeah, that's why that bid, and even in 2022, was so important. Or next summer, had the United States won that bid, then it's the dream of all dreams, right? To be scoring, yeah, World Cup goals on your own soil.
Yeah, that it would have been amazing. But hey, man, never say never. Right? Yeah. You never know in, yeah, life, man. That is, I don't know if you want to say out loud or how old I'll be, but I'll be around. I might be on one knee, but I might be there. You never know. Never know.
Well, you got to play. I got to be able to get up the stairs to wherever the seat is in 2026 to swing it. And my kids will have to carry me up. We're thrilled you're off to such a good start, and you took some extra time for us, and we wish you best of luck with. I think you guys are going to be a big story all summer, and you know what it was like into the fall. I was at the Montreal game. It's one of the greatest sporting events I've ever been to. I got to take my kid. He'll never forget it. It really captured the city. I hope the players realized it and realized how backed they are by this great city now.
No, we do. We feel the love, and that's what makes everything so much more special. It's not, you know, no disrespect to other clubs, but it's not your run-of-the-mill team, but you're buried kind of behind or underneath other teams. Toronto FC here, you know, obviously it's not the exact same, but it's very relevant in the city. You know, we have a fan base that, regardless of who's playing on the night, will still come in waves to support us. So we know that, we're excited about it, and we want to give the city, again, hopefully something to be proud of, you know, come that winter.
Oh, it's so fun going to the games. There's nothing, yeah, like it in the city. Josie, yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, and best of luck the remainder of the season.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Josie. Really appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
It's so nice after a decade of struggles that last season TFC was finally able to get it together. And still going forward. I mean, they're having a heck of a year.
Well, and their playoff. Remember, they made the playoffs 2 years ago, and yeah, it was a one-game thing in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And it was over. I want to say they gave up 2 goals in the first 20 minutes. And so all the supporters that travel there, everybody watching on TV, I'm sure I just started wandering around the house at that point, and other people just sort of gave up. And there's been that phrase, that's so TFC. Mm-hmm. And
now it has a new meaning.
It has a new meaning because there's consistency. And so funny because I remember driving home listening to them introduce, when Tim Leiwicki was here,
oh yeah,
introducing
memories.
Jermaine Defoe. Mm-hmm. And then it's
bloody
like...
bloody big deal.
A bloody big deal. And then all of a sudden, it's like, and at the same news conference, it's, oh, yeah, and we got USA team captain Michael Bradley.
Right.
And it was so
sad. He was just sitting there.
Right, because they didn't make a big fuss about that. And I'm thinking,
happy to be here.
Bradley's younger, and he might, right away, you just felt like he had that feel that he might be here longer. And especially you felt that 2 months into the season. So I'm really, you know, thrilled for him, thrilled for Altidore, thrilled for the Canadian players on the team. It's really significant watching young kids at these games, because I do think you need a jumping off point. We've seen it with the Blue Jays for 3 years. We talked about this before, how everybody thought, oh, is the Leafs fan base older and is the Raptors fan base and TFC younger? And then when the Leafs played playoff games this year against Washington, and your best three forwards or three of your best are a 19-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 20-year-old, mm-hmm. you're seeing people their age at Maple Leaf Square cheering for the Leafs, and you're going, oh, so young people. It's not just an old, you know, stodgy people in their 40s and 50s who love the NHL and love the Leafs. You just got to give them a reason to love them. The Raptors were like that for 10 years. It's like, give me something to get excited about at the end of the day, and they weren't able to do it for quite a long time.
It's also good, too, in the MLS, just for Canadian fans and Toronto fans, too.
Yeah.
Watching guys like Kyle Aaron down in Orlando. I mean, he's one of the best young players in the entire league. So slowly but surely, I think it's just going to help grow the game in Canada. And the growth always starts the grassroots. It always starts with the kids.
Yeah. And we did mention to Josie the 2026 World Cup. Not to tell tales out of school, but Josie would be 37.
37 will be summer. The new 27 year by then.
Well,
right?
Listen, if Tom Brady's playing quarterback at 45 and they're...
Giselle's not happy.
Yeah, no, she's not happy about that. There are NHL players playing deep in... I mean, Chris Chelios played till he's 47. Why can't the U.S. have a top striker be 36? Well, there's probably good reasons why.
And the cardio, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because you were in last week... You played softball, and you're in your late 20s, right. And you were like, oh, my sore bones. But
yeah.
I think it was that was over a one incident.
To be fair, I was hit in the knee
by
a softball. And by that, I mean I missed the ball and it hit my knee.
But I watched...
Cause and effect.
I watched my wife play... we went out Victoria Day. Our kids had they had their soccer practice canceled, so one of the parents had the wise idea to create a parents-kids game. In lieu of a practice.
I see where this is going.
After my Baycrest injury, I'm like, I'm out, you're in. Because I've done it, and though it was outside, I thought, I'm going to catch a rut. My knee's going to double the size again. And so I watched her play, and she was icing her feet when she went to bed last night. And there were, like, I think it's the hardest sport, more than hockey, because hockey's got some gliding to it,
mm-hmm.
to be good at a lot later age.
You can't cheat the cardio.
You can't play old-timer soccer and look like golf, tennis. You can do all that stuff. But you can't play old-timer soccer
in
your 50s.
No, it turns into
foosball. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you may as well just stand. Yeah, you may as well be joined on an iron bar and have somebody slide you back and forth.
And just move your feet. Shuffle.
That's the safe.
Or play net. Play net and you'll be fine. You can fake it net when you're older.
Yeah, that's the safest thing for you at the end.
And just hope no ball comes near you.
And yet I saw our Sportsnet colleague, James Sharman, and he was playing in some... I saw a pitcher tweeted out, and he was playing in some charity tournament a week and a half ago. And I'm like, how's there no... I'm seeing him later this week. I'm like, how's there no damage? How are all your ligaments together?
It's emotional damage.
Yes, but there's a lot of that. Brandon Dunlap plays, Thomas Dobby, one of the producers on Tim and Sid plays. These guys just won't give up the ghost, and they're all getting older. It's time.
I'm sure they'll appreciate this
shout-out on the podcast. They should.
What a bunch of old guys, old farts.
So we'll do what up with that in a little bit, but we've got to give some time to television. Now, you know, you can grill me on this. I've wanted to talk about this, so something I was really excited to happen. So I loved, and I wasn't alone, the original Twin Peaks series. Now, mm-hmm. this was on ABC, and it started in April of 1990. And I'm going to guess, I could go on for the reasons I loved it, but it was it wasn't a cult hit. It was a cultural phenomenon. Like, Time Magazine is like, who killed Laura Palmer? Like, it was an unbelievable convergence of right show, right time. It made a lot of careers, right? People learned who Sherilyn Fenn was, Kyle MacLachlan,
mm-hmm.
And David Lynch as well had made Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. And a lot of these movies that, like, he was the hottest director. Everybody has their sort of, Oliver Stone had that for 2 or 3 years. I think David Lynch had that for 3 or 4. Now, had you seen the original Twin Peaks series?
Nope, never.
You can right now. Never. You realize that.
Well, okay, so you were getting your hopes up, which is a dangerous thing to do, because you were all excited about watching it come back, and how did that go?
It was absolutely weird, and it was weirder than the original, and I didn't think that was possible, and I thought, have I normalized, so I have a different definition of weird than I did in 1991? Maybe so. And but it was too strange. I will say, if it stays this strange, I don't know. Well, I don't know if I'm out. I don't know if I can.
And you call yourself a fan.
I know. But there's loyalty only goes. Loyalty has to be a two-way street. The show has to give you.
That's true.
The show has to give the audience what the audience is willing to give back. And that's, I'm, put it this way, I'm going to be incredibly patient, but it was, like, to say it was all over the map doesn't quite cover it. Uh-huh. It's like The Leftovers is all over the map.
See, you're not
Lost
selling
was
this
all
to
over
me.
The map. Yeah. I know. I watch
enough TV. I can't watch another show.
There's no way, Carolyn, I can say to somebody who didn't see the original and wasn't taken by it, well, you'll really enjoy this. Like, I did show it to my wife. We watched the whole run of it about 8, 9 years ago. And even she said after one episode, this isn't as good as it originally was. And I'm like, I know. I'm realizing this very quickly. But I can't. I'm.
It's nostalgia.
Yeah.
Nostalgia is a powerful, powerful.
It's a powerful thing. And if I'm easily appeased by something I enjoyed earlier, I'm going to give it more time. If this was a brand new show and had no semblance of relation to the Twin Peaks that I knew, and all these great people weren't involved, all these really talented people.
You'd have no interest.
Right. Because you told me you saw Kyle MacLachlan first on
Sex in the City.
On Sex in the City. Yeah. As a rather less than potent, less than virile husband of Kristen Davis.
Well put.
Is that?
Yeah.
Did he eventually get his struggles worked out? I can't even remember.
He did, but then they split. He wasn't able to for long.
Yes. And then she married the smaller bald
the
guy,
lawyer.
The Jewish guy.
Yeah. The divorce
Eddie,
lawyer.
It's going to drive me crazy. What's his name?
I forget.
And they had twins.
What is his name? I don't think. Did they have? I don't think they had twins.
They had a bunch of children. Then why do I just consider twins as being a bunch of children? Yeah. That's wrong.
They just had two kids.
Because the one guy, the one guy's Mr. Big, right?
Oh,
Harry.
Yeah.
Harry's his name.
Oh yeah, Harry.
Harry Goldenblatt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He was nice.
IMDb.
I liked him
More than Kyle MacLachlan's character, Trey McDougal.
Yes. And Mrs. and his mom.
I forgot all about the mom.
Yeah, she was a tough cookie.
I can't, like, if people are saying you're not advocating to, I'm not telling you not to watch Twin Peaks, but I'm saying.
Well, that's what it sounds like.
If you watch the original and you haven't seen it yet, be really patient. Treat it like a relative that you just can't, like.
Can't stand a Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, yeah, but you can't kick them out the door just yet.
Right.
Like, if they don't get off your couch within a week. You will, if it's like a nephew or something and they've come and they, you know, they're out of work and they're down on their luck and you're finding cigarette butts under the couch, give them a couple days to straighten themselves out.
It's concerning that we take TV shows so seriously that we're comparing them to relatives.
And so you're in the middle, people found this fascinating. You're in the middle of a Bones
That's right.
marathon.
I'm still doing it. I think now I'm on to seasons probably from like 2008. So I'm getting closer.
And have any...
Everyone is making fun of me.
Have any episodes sort of... Do they sort of blend into each other? Because it feels like you
yes.
could start...
When you're binge watching, it's all a blur. You don't know where you are, what's...
But I don't feel like
when
with Bones...
When did it start? When did it end?
With Bones, you don't need to see... It's not like Dexter. It's not like a continuous arc
of
stories.
Each one has a new case. But their personal lives develop over the season.
That's okay.
And that's why you hang around.
But right now, is the concept always, because when I watch it, the concept is, hey, will these two get together?
Yes.
And that's still...
Still
you're...
waiting. Yeah. It's okay. We'll get there.
You think so? I don't know. Oh, do you know something I don't? Because
yeah,
I don't know whether that happened.
Yeah, no.
You've paged ahead.
Yeah.
You've read season synopsis.
Well, I just want to make sure I'm not wasting my time.
It is... you brought that up, though.
I think I am probably
It is... We grew up in an era where you'd see, like, you'd find out a movie's coming out, and you're like, I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait.
Yeah.
And TV was sort of a background. And so I can't tell if it's that I'm older or whether it's switched, because I feel like obviously kids get excited about movie premieres, but I worry. Bill Maher did this big thing Friday night on how the superhero movie has just almost ruined movies. Mm-hmm. And then we elected a superhero ex-president in Donald Trump. I didn't say a good or evil superhero, but there is something to that. I feel like there's way more movies geared at kids and not enough to thinking people. The TV shows are what's geared to thinking people now.
I used to go see movies all the time in theaters, and that was at the same time that I was watching TV shows where, okay, it's Tuesday or Thursday night or Sunday night. This is the night that I watch my TV show, and I know that's what I'm doing. But now I think it's just like anything. It's just like even with other parts of the internet where we're used to doing things on our own time. So yeah. I now prefer binge watching shows. That's just how I like to watch.
What's one of the first shows on network television that you remember just being grabbed by and you're like, this is, and you were already interested in media and TV, radio, etc. So what grabbed you right away?
I'm trying to think.
Like, Friends is probably too late. You saw shows before.
Yeah,
Friends.
Seinfeld I was really into, okay. But I was into that even once it started reruns.
And I feel like Shears not in your wheelhouse,
no.
Really. It wouldn't have been.
No, I mean, I show my age by saying shows that came out were things like The O.C.,
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love The O.C.
Yeah, but you wait all week, and then the night comes, and you watch your TV show. Where now, I never do that. If I am watching a show that's out on TV now, then I just PVR it and watch whenever I want.
Yeah.
And Netflix, you watch whenever you want. So I think that's why it's changed. And it's just interesting because more and more A-listers have switched, not switched, but they're doing more and more television. And more and more television online.
The salaries must be better. Like, obviously, Netflix is putting a lot of capital in. You're not getting Kevin Spacey for cheap, right? You're not getting anybody that's in a Netflix original show to show up for pennies on the dollar. They're doing, and they're shot so well on HBO, on Showtime.
The Crown? Like, have you seen The Crown?
The Crown, I've seen two episodes
of. The money behind that is incredible.
See, people ask me sometimes about shows, but I don't feel like you're sleeping. I feel like you're younger, you're vibrant, and I can't stay up. So I'll say that I watched something, but I fell asleep in the second episode. That's often an indictment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in my case. That's just me and my habits. So then I'll go back because I fell asleep during the second episode of The Crown, or I'll fall asleep during an episode of Leftovers,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll pick it right back up the next day.
It's a good thing you're not a TV critic. I fell asleep, but I think it was actually okay.
Yeah, there's no way to say. I fell asleep and it was fantastic. Vice versa. So we'll get set to do. You've got some stories to to wrap the
what up with that?
The episode with. To do what up with that?
I like how I've just forced this title.
Yeah, the title I think most people are okay with. I don't think anybody has suggested an alternate title. We've gotten some thumbs up for the music and thumbs up for the pace of the segment. But they got to dig through on their iPods, you know, a good 30, 40 minutes to get to this segment. So it's a buried treasure. Put it that way.
Oh, nicely put.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
So a 12-year-old girl choked out a 24-year-old in an MMA fight in Japan. And I would just like to ask, how is that even allowed? It's just a publicity stunt.
So we wouldn't be doing, like, the story would sound really wrong if it was the other way around.
True.
But
yes.
that option was there. I assume the man was trying to win the fight.
No, they're girls.
Oh, a 24-year-old female.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wow, that would be like, something.
Well, when you say mixed martial arts, I'm thinking it's like mixed doubles.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe this. And here, this is a good line. The rules of the bout were tweaked to make it slightly more safe by banning strikes to the head of a granted opponent and requiring participants to wear headgear.
Totally. Well, makes perfect sense.
Doesn't make me feel much better.
How long did it take the 12-year-old to win, does it say?
That's a good question.
Because some of these fights end in like 20 seconds.
Yeah. A 12-year-old.
Yeah. Have you ever had an embarrassing, like only in tennis, I was turning 16 and lost in the camp semifinal match, like for the whole camp. So it was like 5-6 rounds to get there to an 11-and-a-half-year-old from Switzerland. I always point out he was from Switzerland and he was ranked. But I was like, I'm almost ready to drive a car and he's 11. And he beat me, this kid, Nicholas,
You still remember his name.
Oh, my God. Because I was so angry at him for losing. And then the lunchroom closed, but our match was like almost 3 hours. And they let us both into the lunchroom. And we're like, well, we'll eat together. And then I got to know him. And I'm like, hey, not a bad 11-year-old kid. I don't hate him anymore.
I don't think I have had an embarrassing loss. Look at that. Or I just can't remember. I've pushed it to the back of my
If you played tennis now against a, like, no matter whether they were, like, there must be a certain age you'd be a bit embarrassed to lose by. Like, I think golfers are like that.
I'm a good recreational player, but that's it.
Yeah, but what if a 13-year-old walks on the court and you can't get a game off?
I'd be pretty upset. I would be very upset.
That's right. What if an 8-year-old did?
I'd be so embarrassed. But it could happen.
It could happen.
So
you'd give up the sport after that.
That's why I will not accept any of those challenges.
But I guess hand-to-hand combat. Like, you think that's about different. That in elementary school.
Can you imagine facing, though, if you're a 24-year-old, facing a 12-year-old?
Because it's literally a no-win scenario.
Yeah.
If you win, it's because you're
exactly.
older and bigger.
Yeah.
If you lose, you're the sucker.
Oh, boy. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because I thought it was so ridiculous and just should not
It is. That's
be
what that that's what this, this segment's about. It's ridiculousness in nature.
Okay, here's our tennis for this episode. Because it seems we've had a tiny bit of tennis talk in each episode.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah. So Maria Sharapova did not get a wild card for the French Open, will not be in qualifying for the French Open, will be in qualifying for Wimbledon, and she has now gotten a wild card to August's Rogers Cup in Toronto. Does this surprise you?
I don't think they had another move to make. And by then, I think you're also safeguarding, you're hedging your bets because by then, don't you think her results will be good enough that she has enough points to qualify anyway? That could transpire, but then like a really good two or three grass court tournaments if she's able to play at Wimbledon. What I don't know is how she'll be received. I mean, we all know that often with team sports, the person comes in and if he's not on your team, there's lots of booing. But individual sports are so tricky because you're not sure at times who some are obvious crowd favorites and you know the crowd's going to back them. But remember, you know, some people have been for the Williams sisters and some people against because they want to see a longer match or they're cheering for the underdog, right? So there's a million reasons why you may end up pulling for somebody else. So I don't know what the reaction will be to her at Wimbledon or at somewhere else, right?
I think the reaction for her in Toronto will be different than it will be most places because I don't think people want to see stars in Toronto. I mean, there's a lot of casual tennis fans and just sports fans who come to see the Rogers Cup, and you need to get people in those seats.
Yeah.
And someone like Sharapova will get them there, especially a year where Serena Williams won't be around. She won't be here.
Azarenka still won't, correct?
Well, Azarenka could maybe be here.
Could she be back?
Because she still wants to return sometime.
I want to say Belinda Bencic is injured, who made a big splash
injured.
In Toronto 2 years ago.
Yeah, so
look at that.
I mean, you need star power in a city like Toronto, and when the tournament's just outside of the city, you need stars. So to me, it was a no-brainer to give Sharapova a wild card.
We were talking at home about who the top five seeds would be, and
we don't even know.
No,
at this
because
point.
Muguruza hasn't been. Great.
No, she struggled.
Joanna Konta is probably going to be one of them,
yeah,
wouldn't you think?
Yeah, Halep.
And Simona Halep, yeah.
Yeah. Svitolina, she's been very good. She just won in Rome.
Is Serena going to come back?
Yes. It sounds like she said in a TED Talk in Vancouver a few weeks ago she will.
Yeah.
And I know things can change when she has her baby, but I feel like she will. Because can you imagine if Serena comes back, just when you think she's done it all, comes back
yeah.
and goes on a tear and wins a slam, wins a couple slams. Yeah, I think she'll be back. I hope she's back.
Yeah. But again, this is sort of like we talked about the Roger Federer thing. It's partially, if she comes back and is dominant at age 36 and 37 as a mother, it's a little bit of an indictment on the 24, 25, 26-year-old players. I mean, how can it not be?
Yeah.
Right? It's a testament to her greatness, but it's also like, step up, other ladies.
Yeah.
This should be your time.
Hurry
and you're
up.
Not making it your time.
Yeah. Okay. You almost went to two concerts this weekend in the span of 2 days. So my question is, how many is too many?
Well, I went to see Midnight Oil at the Danforth on Saturday, and then I almost went to see And some people said, what are you going? This would be morbid. Prince's old band, who he busted up in 86, The Revolution, was playing at the Phoenix. And I probably pulled the chute on going about an hour and a half before going. I was going to go by myself. I went with a friend of Midnight Oil, but I was going to buy go by myself, buy it, be among Prince friends, the Prince family, wear purple, and maybe like some lacy cufflinks or
but
something.
You didn't have any purple, so you canceled.
And I thought, but I also saw the show was sold out. And weirdly, I felt like I needed to show support if the show wasn't sold out. But because it was, I didn't need to buy a ticket on StubHub or
it's
something.
Too bad you're not a Senators fan.
And or that the Revolution wasn't playing at the Senators game, because then I can kill two birds with one stone. But I used to, I don't know how much of a concert goer you are, I used to gig it all the time and be in that sort of college radio community, and you'd be like, this band who had one song that you heard for 38 seconds once and you didn't understand any of the words is playing. Do you want to go? Yes. And you'd leave your crappy apartment in London, Ontario, because you'd do anything to go out at night. You'd take any invitation. You'd go with anybody to a movie. You'd go with anybody to a restaurant. And now it's like, I like my home a lot, and I like my quiet life with
that's all it comes
with
down
a nice
to,
size
eh?
TV, so and there's a fridge nearby, and there's available bathrooms, and no one will throw up anywhere near me.
I mean, this is logical.
Yes.
How many concerts did you go to each year, on average, when you were in the height of concert?
I think three a month isn't ridiculous. Four or five a month sometimes.
Oh,
I'm sure
gosh.
I went.
That's expensive.
It can get, yeah. Well, the shows used to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
I remember the very first time I spent $100 for a ticket, and I think that was the Eagles show at Exhibition Stadium, and you're like, wow, we've crossed a threshold here where it gets a little dangerous. What about you?
The most concerts I've probably been to in a year is maybe three.
Okay.
I find, though, because I work nights for Sportsnet Central and a lot of acts come to town weeknights, especially in the summer, I find it tough to go.
How on earth would you be able to? Exactly. No,
yeah,
and
but I'm going to Jack Johnson. I've wanted to go to Jack Johnson for years. So I'm going to see him beginning of June at Budweiser Stage, I think it's now called in
and
Toronto.
Is he playing
I'm
with somebody
really
else?
Excited. No.
Just
I don't even know who's opening. I think the opening acts are alternating and his tour's not even that long. I'm really excited, though.
And who else? Like, give me some shows from your...
shows? I've been to...
Your relative youth?
Oh, I went to Stevie Wonder.
Okay, that's good, yeah.
Was that last year? Year and a half ago? That was great. I've seen John Mayer a couple times, Ed Sheeran. Yeah, I've never seen, though, any of the
you feel like I feel like you'd be on the
acts.
Older side of an Ed Sheeran fan. Or has he just gotten all these younger fans the last couple years?
No,
there's
I think
the last couple
he, I
months,
think,
I should say, with I that think, song, Shape of You. It's everywhere.
No, I think it's a wide range of fans. Look, you're so in the know.
I get him confused with David Gray. Is that wrong?
Oh, yeah. I like David Gray.
But he's a lot younger than David Gray.
That's the kind of style of music I like.
And he seems like he has a better set. Like, some people don't like people who are just sad all the time. David Gray just felt like he was never... But, I mean, I love the Smiths. So there were, like, constantly depressing songs and music, and yet I couldn't get enough of it.
Oh,
or The Cure, for that matter.
One of the best concerts I ever saw, it was actually it was in Toronto at a music festival, Field Trip, a couple of years ago, and it was Alabama Shakes.
Okay, I know who they are.
They were so good.
All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know what? Maybe after this, I'm going to go online and see who else is in town coming up.
So I felt like, yeah, I would have been really pushing the limitations that I now have mentally and physiologically to have that's supposed to physically to have made that show Sunday night, and
yeah.
I feel like I'd be hurting even today on a Tuesday.
So instead you stayed home and watched Twin Peaks.
But don't I find now I feel like this is a generational thing, and I meant to bring this up. Now that you can see concert clips on YouTube.
Oh yeah, I do that,
that
all the time.
Dissuades me from going to shows, and I hate that, because before you would not know what the set list was. Now you can look it up on websites all the time. And you wouldn't know sort of how the interpretation of the song was, or like some there was some mystery about like, what's the artist like? What do they look like? What do they say in between the songs? And now you have none of that because you get it all in advance.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to you. Times are changing.
Times have changed. Like, we're getting more information, but it's not the element of surprise and subtlety is kind of gone.
I know what you mean,
from
you
the
see
live
the clips
music
already.
Industry.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's okay. Way to end the podcast on a low.
That was the low? And
no.
That's the end?
I guess so. I'm
it
out.
Is. I don't have anything extra
neither.
Specific. Although Roger Moore passed away. Did you notice
yes,
that?
Did I
you
did
know
hear
now
that.
Do you have any James Bond enjoyment?
Do you I remember as a kid, between Christmas and New Year's, for years, there was always a James Bond marathon. I don't remember what channel it was.
TBS, probably.
Was it? Yeah.
And or AMC, maybe.
I would watch with my brothers and my dad. My mom, I think, was just doing other things. And I would watch James Bond movie after movie after movie. It was great.
It's Roger Moore was 89 and died after a battle with cancer. But it's significant because I'm a child of the 70s, so Roger Moore Bond movies were the first Bond movies I saw.
That's what you were introduced to.
So,
yeah.
And then you go back and older people then, no, he's not good enough. Sean Connery is where you need to go, and now everybody goes
Everyone has their Bond.
Yeah, because at some point, but I wonder if there's people younger than me who are like, the best James Bond ever is Pierce Brosnan.
They
might like those three movies that Brosnan made. Because the first Bond movie I ever saw was A View to a Kill.
Hmm.
That was the very first one with the Duran Duran song.
And then the question is, who's next?
Who's the next Bond?
I know. Still haven't decided.
A lot of talk about Idris Elba.
I would love him to be
Jason
Bond.
Statham. He's in enough action movies, maybe as it is.
Yeah,
maybe he's not suave enough. He's more of a grunt, if you will. Potentially. Our thanks to Josie Altidore.
Yes.
He was great. And we hope you are enjoying the podcast. You can find it on iTunes, obviously, or on Google Play, or on the website at sportsnet.ca/590. And when we talk next, we'll know a lot more about the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals. And I believe the Toronto Blue Jays are going to keep playing games.
Yeah, I've heard.
That's it.
See ya.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.